This is Audible.
Prologue. In the beginning was the Empire, and all was well. It was the great adventure of humanity, springing out from its home world, pressing on into the endless dark in search of new worlds and wonders. It was a time of heroes and marvelous deeds, as humanity spread from world to world, and the frontier pressed remorselessly outward. 1,000 worlds with 1,000 civilizations, blazing so brightly against the dark. The Empire. It took 400 years for the rot to set in. Parliament became corrupt, the Company of Lords grew increasingly powerful on the profits from plundered worlds, and the Emperor ruled over all with an iron fist from his iron throne. Technology produced human clones and espers, declared them nothing but property, and institutionalized slavery. It was still a great empire, but only if you were rich or of noble birth or had connections in the right places. Everyone else worked hard, kept their heads down, and tried not to be noticed. And so it went for 900 years. By the time of Owen Deathstalker, the Empire was ripe for rebellion. Owen never wanted to be a hero. Despite his family's martial history, he always saw himself as a scholar rather than a warrior. But when the Empress Lionstone 14 had him outlawed and put a price on his head that had his own people scrabbling to kill him, he had no choice but to run for his life and reluctantly grasp his destiny. He fell in with fellow outlaw Hazel Dark, pirate Bon Vivant, and ex-clone legger, and together they fled to the rebel planet Mistworld, where they encountered Jack Random, the legendary professional rebel, Ruby Journey, the female bounty hunter, and Tobias Moon, an augmented man from Lost Hayden. Together they traveled to the planet Chandrakor, with its boiling jungles and endless carnage. And at the last standing of the Deathstalker clan, they discovered Owen's ancestor of some 900 years earlier, the man called Giles, first warrior prime of the Empire, and creator of the terrible Dark Void device. He took them to the Wolfling world, where they met the last Wolfling, sole survivor of his genetically engineered kind. They passed through the madness maze and were changed, emerging much more than they had been. Together, they would inspire and lead the greatest rebellion the Empire would ever know. In her palace of brass and steel, set within a massive steel bunker deep below the surface of the planet Golgotha, sat the Empress Lionstone 14, the beautiful and adored, whose word was law, and at whose whim blood flowed and people died horribly. At her side, the Lord High Dram, warrior prime and consort, called by some Widowmaker, though never to his face. At her command, loyal subjects like Captain Silence and Investigator Frost of the Starship Dauntless. At her feet, the families jostled and conspired to win her favor, and hunted down her enemies without mercy. Lionstone had strengths and surprises of her own, and would not easily be brought down. And watching from the sidelines, waiting to see which way the wind might blow, many who might be swayed one way or the other. Valentine, head of Clan Wolf, favored and powerful, a dandy and drug user of legendary proportions. Kit Summerisle, head of his clan, called by some Kid Death, the smiling killer. Cardinal James Kasser, fanatic and rising star of the Church of Christ the Warrior. In the shadows, the clone and Esper underground fought their losing battles and dared to dream of freedom. They had allies in the Cyberrats, computer hackers and non-people by choice, and also in restless younger sons who knew they would never inherit the family name and riches. And just occasionally, a hero would come to them, such as Finley Campbell, once known as the Masked Gladiator, unconquered champion of the arena, and Mater Mundi, our mother of all souls, uber Esper, and unfathomable mystery, powerful beyond hope or sanity. All the players were in place. The stage was set. All that was necessary now was for someone to strike the first blow. Owen Deathstalker, that reluctant hero, headed for Golgotha in the company of Hazel Dark, on a strange golden ship run by augmented men, once known as the enemies of humanity. And though posterity has no access to his thoughts, they were probably, "Why me?" Defiance Audio presents Simon R. Green's Deathstalker Rebellion. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Nanette Savard, Terrence Aselford, and Colleen Delaney. With special guest performer Thomas Penny. Episode 1, Opening Gambit. "Why me?" thought Owen Deathstalker as he headed for the toilet yet again. He knew he wouldn't really need to do anything once he got there, but his bladder wasn't listening to reason. Not for the first time, it had ideas of its own. He was always like this when the pressure was on, and he had too much time to think. The afternoon before he'd made his first major speech at the Imperial Historians Convention, he'd spent so long in their toilets that they actually sent someone in to ask if he was all right. Owen stepped inside the starship's single toilet and pulled the door shut behind him. It wasn't much, just a small steel cubicle with a gleaming steel bowl. Owen unzipped and aimed carefully. He didn't want the others to think he was incredibly nervous. It was the waiting that got to him. He was hardly nervous at all during a fight, usually because he was too busy trying to keep himself from being killed to have time to worry. But beforehand, his imagination always insisted on picturing all the ways things could go horribly wrong in a hurry. And his current mission of heading for Golgotha, the most closely guarded planet in the Empire, in a golden ship built by inhuman beings who were once officially known as the enemies of humanity, had never struck him as being that sane an idea in the first place. Even if it had been his idea. But it had to be said the Hayden Man ship was the best choice open to the nascent rebellion. His own ship, the marvelous Sunstrider, had been one of the fastest in the Empire, but he'd had to leave it where it crashed, deep in the deadly jungles of Chandrakor. And his ancestor Giles's vessel, the last standing, had been ruled out very early on. A huge stone castle with a built-in star drive was many things, but inconspicuous wasn't one of them. The sleek, golden ships of the Hayden Men, however, were everything the rebels needed, and more. Incredibly fast, powerfully armed, and so tightly cloaked there wasn't a sensor display in the Empire sensitive enough to pick them up. In theory, anyway. The Hayden Men had been out of things for a while. The one thing the starship hadn't had was a toilet. Apparently, augmented men didn't need such things. Owen hadn't inquired further. He didn't think he really wanted to know. When Owen had discovered he and Hazel Dark had been volunteered to represent the rebellion on this mission, he had argued long and loudly against the decision. And when he lost, as he'd always known he would even before he opened his mouth, he had stated flatly that he wasn't going anywhere with the Hayden Men until they installed a toilet. The Hayden Man craft might be incredibly fast and powerful, but it was still a long trip to Golgotha. And Owen knew only too well what his nerves were going to be like. So they'd added this cramped little cubicle, especially for him and his nerves. There was no wash basin, rug around the base, or even a seat to lift. There was no toilet paper either. But Owen had already decided very firmly that he wasn't going to think about that eventuality. He looked at his reflection in the steel wall before him. A man in his mid-twenties, tall and rangy, with dark hair and darker eyes. Not exactly soft, but not the kind of person you'd be scared of meeting in a back alley, either. Owen sighed deeply, finished what he was doing, zipped up again, and left the toilet with as much dignity as he could muster. Minimalist though it was, he preferred the look of the toilet to the interior of the Hayden Man ship. Its layout had not been designed with human comforts in mind, like sense or logic, and some of its aspects were positively disturbing. Owen concentrated on getting back to Hazel, who was sitting cross-legged on the deck between two enigmatic protrusions of Haydenman machinery. She was busy dismantling and cleaning her new projectile weapon, and she spared Owen only a scornful glance as he approached. Hazel Dark was never bothered by nerves. Give her something destructive to play with, and she was happy as a pig in muck. Owen sank down beside her, being very careful not to touch anything. There were no seats or rest stations anywhere in the ship. Instead, unfamiliar, inhuman technology filled the interior from stem to stern, with Haydenmen plugged into it here and there as needed. The augmented men were part of the ship, or it was part of them, and they ran it with their thoughts. Owen and Hazel fitted in where they could and tried not to look too directly at the incomprehensible machinery. It made their eyes hurt. Lights came and went, of painful brightness and unfamiliar hues, and the angles of the larger shapes were disturbing, as though trying to lead the human eye somewhere it couldn't or wouldn't follow. Owen settled himself as comfortably as he could on the unyielding steel deck and hugged his knees to his chest. The ship intimidated the hell out of him, and he didn't care who knew it. He looked at Hazel, who was completely absorbed in what she was doing. A tall, lively, muscular woman in her early 20s, Hazel always looked as though she was about to explode into action at any moment. Green eyes peered challengingly out at the world from under a mane of long, ratty red hair, and her rare smiles came and went so quickly they were often missed. As usual, she'd loaded herself down with weapons. Her disruptor hung in its usual place on her right hip in its well-worn leather holster. Standard energy pistol, powerful enough to blast through steel plate as long as the gun's energy crystal was fully charged, and provided you didn't mind waiting the 2 minutes it took for the crystal to recharge between shots. Her sword hung on her left hip, the chased metal scabbard stretched out across the deck. Standard sword, heavy enough to do real damage without being so long it became unwieldy. Scattered across the deck before her were the component parts of her projectile weapon. Actually, there looked to be enough parts to make several weapons. Owen had no idea the things were so damn complicated. He had ambivalent feelings about the antiquated projectile weapons his ancestor Giles had provided from the last standing's armory. They weren't nearly as powerful or as accurate as energy weapons, but when they were pumping out several hundred bullets a minute on full auto, they didn't really need to be. There was none of that waiting for 2 minutes between each shot nonsense with them either. Hazel had all but fallen in love with the new, or, more strictly speaking, old type of weapons, and sang their praises at every opportunity. She'd taken to carrying several of the guns, and enough ammunition to bulge every pocket she had. Owen remained unconvinced as yet. He carried a projectile weapon of his own, as well as his disruptor, but he thought he'd wait and see how the gun performed in a continuous firefight before he made up his mind. Personally, he thought Hazel liked her new toys so much, only because they had lots of separate pieces she could play with. And finally, when push came to shove, he still believed in cold steel as the answer to most problems. A sword had no parts to go wrong, never ran out of ammo, and didn't need to recharge for 2 minutes between use.
"You keep squeezing it dry like that, you're going to flatten it,"
Hazel said casually.
"Never known anyone to spend so much time in a toilet. Check your guns again, it's very comforting."
"No, it isn't," said Owen. "There isn't a single comforting thing anywhere in this unnatural ship, and that very definitely includes you."
"You never cease to amaze me, Aristo. I've seen you fight appalling odds and go charging into situations I wouldn't tackle for all the credits in Golgotha's treasury. You come from one of the greatest warrior families in the Empire, but every time we have to wait around for a bit, you get jumpier than a nun at a dating agency."
"I am not a warrior." Owen determinedly didn't look at her. "I am an historian who is temporarily, and under extreme duress, being forced to act as a soldier of the rebellion. Personally, I can't wait for the rebellion to be over so I can go back to being a minor scholar again, of no importance to anyone but myself, and with no pressures apart from the occasional symposium. I still don't see why I was volunteered for this mission."
"Because it was your idea in the first place. Serves you right for being a smartass. If anyone shouldn't be here, it's me. I'm still not convinced any of this is going to work.
Then what are you doing here?
Someone's gonna watch your back. Besides, I was getting bored just sitting around back there. A complete lack of human comforts, far too much talking, and no action of any kind. I need to be doing something or I get cranky.
I had noticed. Trust me, the plan will work. It's been discussed from every angle and subjected to intense analysis. Even the Haydenmen liked it. This mission is just what we need to start the rebellion with a bang. Something to make the whole Empire sit up and take notice.
Oh, sure. They can all tune in their hollows and watch us getting our ass kicked in living color. Probably repeated at prime time with extra slow motion for the gooey bits.
I thought I was the nervous one.
You are. I'm just practical.
So am I. That's why this plan is the best way to announce the rebellion's presence. We can't hope to win a head-on fight. They've got far more men and guns and ships than we have. So instead, we launch a lightning attack and hit them where it really hurts, in their pockets. With the Haydenmen's help, we'll slip right past Golgotha's defenses unobserved, sneak our way into the main income tax and tithe headquarters, perform our little act of economic sabotage, and be gone before anyone even knows we were there. It's really very elegant when you think about it. We transfer a whole bunch of credits to our pre-prepared rebel accounts, and then erase and scramble everything else. Thus, we not only kick the Empire and Church where it really hurts, and give a major boost to rebel funds, but we also make a lot of friends among the general populace when they realize the Empire won't be able to tax them again until they've got all the records sorted out and reestablished, which could take years. Hazel, could you at least try and look interested in what I'm telling you? You managed to avoid most of the strategy sessions, but you need to understand what we're going to be doing down there.
No, I don't. Just point me in the right direction and turn me loose. If it even looks like an Imperial Guard, it's dead meat. I was good in a fight before we went through the maze, but I'm hell on wheels now. I've got all kinds of abilities I never had before, and I can't wait to try them out.
Owen sighed quietly. We're not just fighters anymore, Hazel. Like it or not, we've become important figures in the rebellion. If we can pull this off, we'll become heroes, even legends. People will look to us for inspiration on how to strike back against the Empire, and they'll join the rebellion in droves. The underground on Golgotha are committing a lot of their people and resources to help us in this, just because they believe in us. By surviving everything the Empire sent after us, we've become the hope of everyone who ever dreamed of being free.
If we're their only hope, they're in big trouble.
Maybe. But whatever the truth of the matter, we have responsibilities now. If we do pull this off, it'll be a sign that this rebellion has a realistic chance of succeeding. The people might believe in us, but the cold facts are that rebellions are extremely expensive to mount. Starships and rebel bases don't come cheap. Remember how Jack Random had to deal and concede and make questionable promises to questionable people to get funding for his wars? And he was the legendary professional rebel. He had to compromise. With the credit we'll be lifting, we won't have to.
All right. Assuming for the sake of argument that we do bring this off without being killed in horrible ways, what then? Turn pirate and pick off Empire ships between planets? Last I heard, the Empire was handing out some really nasty deaths for piracy.
Didn't stop you being one.
Well, I'm not exactly noted for my career choices. So what's the plan, Deathstalker? I can tell you're just bursting to tell me.
That's because it's such a good plan. As you'd know if you'd attended the strategy sessions like you were supposed to.
Nag, nag, nag. Get on with it.
We start small, picking our fights carefully, and build success on success until we're a viable force within the Empire. Then we call on the people to rise up against Lionstone. They've never dared in the past. Quite rightly, they fear reprisals. They also value their comforts too much. They think they have too much to lose. Unless their noses are rubbed in it, they don't like to think about where those comforts come from and who suffers to produce them. Our task is to change the way people think, the way they see the Empire. First, we educate them. Then we encourage them to rise up. And then we help liberate them. Classic strategy. If the Empire really understood the lessons to be learned from studying history, they'd ban it.
You're really getting into this, aren't you, Deathstalker? You've come a long way from the amateur scholar who just wanted the world to leave him alone.
Owen smiled briefly. The world insisted on being heard. I can't go back to being what I was, much as I might like to. I've seen too much. Done too much.
But don't ever see me as some kind of warrior or hero. I might have to play the part for the rebellion, but it's not me. I'll fight when I have to, and that's it. And when it's all over and the fighting's done, I'll be only too happy to climb back up onto my ivory tower and kick the ladder away. I've spent most of my life trying to be the scholar I wanted to be, rather than the warrior my family expected. Circumstances may compel me to act the hero, but circumstances change, and the moment I'm no longer needed, I'll become an historian again so fast it'll make your head spin. People watching will suffer from whiplash. Hazel fit her gun back together with calm, practiced fingers.
It's fighters, not dreamers, who make things change.
I know what you want. You think all of us who went through the maze should use our special abilities to cut a bloody path straight through the Empire to Golgotha, so that you could strut right into the Imperial Palace and take on the Empress head-to-head. Well, you can forget that. The moment we step out into the open, Lionstone will step on us hard, even if it takes half a fleet to do it. We're not gods or superhumans. We've been given a few extra abilities, that's all. Very useful abilities, but only if used in the right ways at the right times.
They're no fun. What did the others think? I suppose they all wanted to pussyfoot around, too?
Owen frowned. Giles wanted to spend the next few years gathering data from a distance and develop hidden power bases throughout the Empire, before risking catching Lionstone's attention. If we'd listened to him, we'd still be sitting on our ass 20 years from now, wondering if it was the right time yet. He hasn't been the same since he killed Dram. He's gone all cautious and non-committal. Jack Random wanted to raise an army on the strength of his name and fight the Empire world by world like he used to. He had to be reminded rather forcibly that his old way hadn't worked then and wouldn't work now. Ruby Journey just wanted to kill someone as soon as possible. And the Wolfling wanted to be left alone. So I've been making most of the decisions of late, because everyone else was too busy sulking.
Maybe I should have got more involved after all.
We all asked you at one time or another. You didn't want to know. You were always off on your own somewhere, preoccupied with your own business. Whatever that might have been. Target shooting with your new toys, or trying to seduce a Haydenman, probably.
I was busy experimenting with the new abilities the maze gave us. You might be afraid of the changes it made in us, but I'm not. We're all stronger, faster, fitter than we were. But there's more to it than that. There's a connection between us now, a mental link on some deep, basic level. It's not Esp. I can't read your mind or anyone else's. But we're joined now in some new primal way. Mind to mind, body to body, soul to soul. Anything you can do, I can do, and vice versa. For example, I can boost now, just like you.
Owen looked at her sharply. Boost was both the gift and the curse of the Deathstalker clan. For short periods, he could become all but superhuman, inhumanly fast and strong, unbeatable with a weapon in his hand. A combination of mental training, engineered glands, and secret chemical caches deep within his body, Boost was a jealously guarded clan secret. It was also more seductive and addictive than any drug could ever be. Owen had learned to use it only sparingly. The candle that burns twice as brightly lasts half as long. Too much use of the boost would quite literally burn him up. Hazel knew some of that, but not all, and not nearly as much as she thought she did. Owen kept his voice carefully calm and even as he spoke. You must be mistaken, Hazel. The boost isn't some Esper phenomenon. It's the result of inherited characteristics, physical changes in the body, and a hell of a lot of training.
And I've got it. I've been practicing with it. You never told me it would feel so good, Owen. I hadn't thought about physical changes being involved, but you're probably right. So what? It just means my body has adapted itself as necessary. Interesting. I wonder what other changes I could make in myself just by thinking about it.
Owen leaned closer so he could look her right in the eye. You're heading into dangerous waters, Hazel. We don't understand enough about what's been done to us to just experiment wildly. You're jumping off the edge with no idea of how deep the drop is. We need to take this one step at a time, under carefully controlled conditions.
You're just frightened of the possibilities.
Damn right I am. So should you. The maze was an alien artifact, remember? Designed by alien minds for alien purposes. The last people to go through it ended up creating the Hayden Men. Every time you experiment blindly, you're risking your very humanity. It's important we take this very slowly, very carefully.
There isn't time! The rebellion needs us now! You're the one who said we had responsibilities, who keeps going on about how important this mission is! If we're going to survive this mission, and the ones that follow, we're going to need every advantage we can get our hands on. If you're not prepared to lead the way, stand aside for someone who is. Don't you worry, Aristo. Once I've reached my full potential, and I'm the superhuman you're so afraid of becoming, I'll take over the rebellion, and you can go back to your books. You're too soft to be a real warrior, Deathstalker. You always were. You still dream about that kid you crippled on Mistworld, don't you? Let it go. She would have killed you without a second thought.
That doesn't matter. Owen still met her gaze with his. She was a child, and I cut her down without thinking, without caring, because I was caught up in the thrill of battle. I won't do that again. If I have to be a fighter, I'll be the kind of fighter I choose to be, not the kind my family or you might prefer. And I won't give up my humanity in the name of necessity. I'm making the decisions in this rebellion because I'm the only one who studied wars and insurrections from the past, and how they're won and lost. We'll fight the Empire through sabotage and subterfuge, and by winning the hearts of the people. No innocence will ever die by our hand. And if you think people will flock to follow some strange superhuman leader, you're wrong. They'd scream for the Empire to hunt you down and kill you, just so they wouldn't have to be afraid of what you might do. We're going to attack the Income Tax and Tithe headquarters as planned. It'll be the signal for a new kind of war, a new kind of rebellion, where no one has to die unnecessarily.
Like I said, soft. And still far too prone to lecturing people. I was hoping the maze might have cured you of that, but apparently not.
Then why are you here, Hazel?
Damned if I know, Deathstalker. I was hoping I was in for a little excitement, but it seems that I was wrong about that, too. Doesn't matter. This is the start of the rebellion, and I'm not missing out on it. And if things do go wrong in your carefully worked out plan, I'll be there to save your ass with my inhuman powers. Fair enough?
You don't understand, Hazel. I'm not afraid of the abilities themselves, just the price we might have to pay for them farther down the road. Hazel looked at him expressionlessly.
You're a fine one to talk. You took that new metal hand of yours from the Hayden Men fast enough. They could have built all kinds of hidden surprises into it, and you'd never know till they activated them.
Owen looked down at the gleaming golden artifact that had replaced the left hand he lost fighting a killer alien the Empire had brought to the Wolfling world. The new hand was perfect in every detail, and responded to him just as readily as his real hand had, though it always felt subtly cold. He looked back at Hazel and shrugged uncomfortably. It's not like I had a choice. I needed a new hand, and I can't trust regeneration machines anymore. Not after my treacherous personal AI programmed the last one with control words the Empire could use against you and me.